Red Eye is a program of alternative politics and culture which broadcasts live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM and around the world at cooperadio.org. Here's Lorraine Chisholm.
Nearly 10 years have passed since the end of the Civil War in Guatemala, a war that resulted in the massacre of thousands of indigenous people. A peace process has been completed. A truth commission has detailed the atrocities committed. The media has praised the country for its transition to democracy. In the meantime, however, Guatemala's Mayan communities are still struggling for control over their land and its resources. In the past month alone, protesters have been jailed in one community and killed in another. Graham Russell of Rights Action in Toronto has joined us to talk about the situation in Guatemala. Good morning, Graham.
Well, thanks for having me on the program.
It's good to have you. Can you tell us what the people are protesting in the town of Los Encuentros?
Well, that's the mining issue, and it's obviously part of a longer and historical issue. But in that particular issue, a Canadian U.S. mining company called Glamis Gold was transporting some equipment up towards its mine site in the northwest area of Guatemala. And it got held up at a particular bridge because the bridge was too low for the equipment to go under it. And so when the company started to proceed to dismantle the bridge to get the equipment through, local residents gathered to find out what was going on. And when they learned that it had to do with the mining issue, which is a very contested issue in Guatemala and elsewhere in the Americas, then they started to protest. And so the protest in Los Encuentros was sort of just a flashpoint of the bigger issue of protesting against mining companies in the country.
Tell us a little bit about the company that's trying to construct the mine there.
Well, it's called Glamis Gold, and it's originally, most of its capital was in the United States, based in Reno, Nevada, and it's also now based in Vancouver, and it's trying to make inroads into Gold Corp, another Canadian gold company. So Glamis is a middle-sized gold operator on the world scale, and it's trying to become a large-scale gold operator. And it has it's operating gold mines in northern Ontario, in the United States, in Mexico, in Honduras, in Guatemala. And we, in our work, have come across its operations in Guatemala and in Honduras, where it's having a very negative impact on local development needs.
And what's their reputation in terms of interacting with the people locally and in terms of environmental care they take?
Well, that depends on who you ask. Obviously, they're presenting themselves out as a company that has deep and full discussions and consultation with local communities, and the types of groups that we work with in supporting Guatemala and Honduras fully disagree. So in the case of the Glamis Gold operation in Guatemala, where the protester was killed a couple of weeks ago, in June of 2004, perhaps May of 2004, the Guatemalan government and the Glamis Gold Company made submissions to the World Bank because they wanted to get World Bank funding. And in their submissions, they said and provided boxes and boxes of documentation saying that they'd complied with consultation requirements of something called the ILO Convention 169, which is an international treaty of the International Labor Organization that sort of sets out minimal consultation standards. And there's even problems with this, with the ILO system itself, but at least it is a piece of international law that should be abided by. So they went to Washington and said they'd abided by this, and then the World Bank said, yes, well, we agree with who you have. We're going to give you a $45 million support, $35 million in risk insurance, and then $10 million as a direct investment. So then you flash right back to Guatemala when the local communities found out that they were the Glamis Gold and the government were in Washington saying these things to the World Bank. They said, well, hey, we don't know anything about this mining operation. And so when you scratch the surface, they'd done very little consultation whatsoever. And that's true for our experience with them in Honduras as well.
So the folks in Los Encuentros decided to protest about this. What happened? What happened then? How were the protests received by the government?
Well, there was approximately a 30-day standoff. Once the shipment could not get under the bridge, and then once the local community started to protest and found out that it was mining equipment, there was a 30-day standoff from early December through to early January, and then the government of Guatemala, which is still, it's not a fair statement to call it a democratic government. The army still plays a huge role in Guatemala. The government just said, we're going to call in the army to clear the roads, because the protesters had basically shut down the road, not to the passing of any vehicles, but just to ensure that this particular transportation truck wouldn't get by. So they called in the army, the protesters that had been protesting peacefully didn't want to be moved, and push led to shove, and then the shots were fired from the armed forces, the army, and one man was killed, and six or seven are seriously wounded and still in hospital. So, and that's quite common in protesting Guatemala.
Yeah. So you mentioned you said earlier that this was a flashpoint at this particular at this particular place. So can you just reflect to us what's happening in the wider situation in Guatemala?
Well, on this issue of companies or big development projects, I think there's two broader issues. One is that Guatemala went through what's called a peace process, but certainly it's my opinion that the peace process has failed completely. In Guatemala, I'm not sure it ever could have succeeded. And one proof of that is that the government in Guatemala is implementing the same economic development model that has led to so much poverty in the past. And so what's the proof of that? Well, the reform of the mining laws in the late 90s, and this happened in Honduras as well, under great pressure from North American mining companies, under pressure from the Canadian and U.S. governments, and under pressure from the World Bank, they reformed their mining laws to make it that much easier for our resource companies to go down there and exploit their wealth. Now, that's just repeating the same problems that led to the conflict in the first place, because it's the development model itself that's the issue. And top-down sort of favoring of global companies, North American mining companies, or the construction of top-down dam projects, for that matter, is not the right way to go about bringing about healthy, good development for the local population. This has been proven historically, and it's now being proven once again. And so this is why it's such a depressing situation in a place like Guatemala, that despite the peace process and the discussion of how to bring about serious reform in the country, nothing's really been done, and they're going ahead with the same old development economic model.
What tools do communities have then to advocate for their rights and lands? Because you mentioned Convention 169 before, but that really consultation wasn't happening. So yeah. So do communities have tools that they can use to leverage their position?
I don't think that they have any formal international tools that favor them. Whether you look in the United Nations system, and that would include the International Labor Organization, whether you look in the system of the Organization of American States, the human rights system there, none of these tools really favor the poor and the victims of violations of human rights in Latin America. Now, it's a bit of an exaggeration. There are some cases that have worked their way through the Inter-American Commission of Human Rights that have had positive results. But for the most part, these systems don't do what they're supposed to do. I think the great challenge, and this is where the role of groups like Rights Action comes in and other northern-based groups, is that we have to work in alliance with groups on the ground in places like Guatemala. We can no longer say we're simply in solidarity with their problems there. We, as groups based in the North, have to understand that these are our problems too, so that the issue of development and poverty in Guatemala is not simply a local or national issue. Our government is conscientiously and working very hard in Guatemala to promote a development economic model, taking the example of this Glamis Gold Company, that benefits Canadian investors and Canadian companies and harms the of local populations in Guatemala. They cannot stop that by themselves, because the problem is not just local or national, it's also international. They need to work in alliance with groups in the United States and Canada so that we understand this, that together this is our problem, and that we have a responsibility in Canada to demand change from our government and corporate practices.
Now, let me take a look at this, because what you describe really is a typical neoliberal development model that's being applied in Guatemala with the pressure from the World Bank.
Mm-hmm.
How are companies like Glamis Gold benefiting from the political and economic climate in Guatemala, or do they benefit from the repression by the government and the instability?
Well, I'm sure that they would prefer there wasn't, you know, repression. I'm sure they would just like to go about and benefit from being able to extract resources in a cheap way. But the way that they benefit is that these companies would not be there if it wasn't worth their money. And that's just a simple business decision. If the costs were too high, if they had really high environmental standards, or if they had really high standards of consultation, where they really had to pay a lot of money back to the local community or the municipal government or the national government, then the cost of extracting the gold would go up, and then they might take a different decision. The main reason that they're in Guatemala now or Honduras is because the cost of doing the operation is so low. Environmental standards are almost non-existent, and the amount of money that they have to pay back to the local and national governments is extremely low. And so they just do a cost-benefit analysis and decide, well, we're going to go ahead with this, even if it causes problems at the local level, because and then they have the government on their side. If push comes to shove, and if the local communities have enough force to be able to protest this and bring out a large number of, you know, campesinos or community members to protest this, then the companies know that sooner or later the government will side with them and use force to help them proceed with their mining operations. So they do that kind of political and economic risk assessment at all times, and then they just, on the balance, decide to proceed.
Where's the accountability here for the Canadian government? Because the Canadian government, the moves by the World Bank are actually opening up opportunities for Canadian investment. Yeah. What can the Canadian government do here?
What should they be doing?
The
Canadian government is very busy promoting the mining. So it's not that the Canadian government is not doing anything. It's doing a lot by promoting this business, this pro-business, pro-mining policy. But I don't think there is any real accountability for either the Canadian government or the World Bank, to take this example, because the accountability for the Canadian government can only come through the Canadian people and through our media and our population and our politicians. And for the most part, our media and our politicians pay no mind to global mining operations, or if they do pay a mind to it, they're in favor of it. And then the Canadian population, I think, for large part, doesn't have a very deep understanding of these issues, because we're not taught a lot about these issues. There's sort of a hidden assumption, I think, in our media, for the most part, that, you know, business for the planet is good. And so it's really, the accountability for the Canadian government should take place here at home, but they're getting away with policies that are very harmful to Guatemalans, and they're not being held accountable for it. I'd make a similar statement about the World Bank. There is no mechanism of accountability, because the countries that invest in the World Bank, like the United States, Canada, Japan, Britain, France, all have a similar mind in terms of opening up all regions of the planet for global business. The World Bank's only accountable to the major donor countries, and the major donor countries are in favor of this type of business model. And so again, there is no way for local people who are harmed by these policies to hold the big actors accountable. It's a major problem of global impunity.
In Canada here, what can people do to take some action and to start saying to the Canadian government, we don't think this is okay?
Well, I think that education, organization, and action. We have to become much more educated about these issues, and groups like Rights Action, we have a lot of information on these types of issues in places like Guatemala and Honduras. And then there's other groups in Canada. There's Mining Watch based in Ottawa. There's Friends of the Earth based in Ottawa. there's Council of Canadians that are increasingly working on issues of global business, so that Canadians should get in touch with groups like ours, get on our mailing list, get on a reading list, and get more educated about these issues. Then the second thing is to get involved in actions of protest. And I know that I don't have the details with me, but I know that coming up very soon, in early February in Vancouver, there's going to be a protest.
We've got the details on that,
great.
So we can share that with people. Yeah.
See, that's a great way for people to get, A, educated, and, B, get involved in action, is to join a protest. Like, find out where these companies have their offices, Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal, wherever, and then join with local organizations to get more educated about the issues, and then join in protest and draw attention to Canadian investors. As to shareholders in these companies as to what's being done in their name.
Great. Okay, Graham, thanks for joining me this morning. It's been really informative, and I really appreciate your taking the time.
Well, thanks very much for covering this issue.
All right, take care.
Bye now.
Bye. I've been speaking with Graham Russell of Rights Action in Toronto. The action he mentions, local groups here in Vancouver are organizing a protest at the Glamis Gold shareholders meeting, so you can go there. It's going to be held in Vancouver on February 9th.
You've been listening to Red Eye, a program produced by an alternative media collective in Vancouver, Canada. Red Eye broadcasts live every Saturday morning from 9 until noon and can be heard around the world at cooperadio.org.